Many people thought the Share Your Embarrassment tour was over, but it was just dormant. We are really excited to announce that right now, tickets are on sale for the streaming Cyboctacular. We filmed our Hollywood show last year, and it's going to be streaming starting May 16th and available for a couple of weeks after that to anyone that holds a ticket. And if you have a Max Fun membership, you can get your ticket at a discount. Just check your inbox for an email for Max Fun with that code. If you aren't and would like to see the show, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets today. These shows are really fun. We put a lot of work into high-quality production values. And if you get a VIP ticket, we can even meet face-to-face over the internet. Get your tickets today at greatestgentour.com, and we'll see you on May 16th.
My friends, the great experiment.
Down on the Lord, thanks. Thanks.
Hit it. Drink. Drink.
Would you look at that?
The greatest trick. Trick.
You people, you're all astronauts. Some kind of star.
Trick. Trick.
The greatest trick.
Trick. Welcome to Greatest Trek. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison. How you doing, Adam?
Ooh, what a day.
we're doing one of those days where your schedule and my schedule are really working across purposes.
Yeah.
We are we're trying to thread the needle.
We're having like a schedule staring contest and neither schedule is blinking.
A rich podcast has an easier time threading this needle than getting to heaven or something.
Then Rick Caruso has a chance of getting to heaven. Yeah, yeah. I think that's how it's
put. Oh, yeah. That's how that goes. I'm having a little impromptu Coco No-No here. I'm having a can of canned Mai Tai.
You have them when you don't have to, and I don't have them when I need to.
Yeah. Yeah. Weird.
Damn. You're just taking better care of yourself.
Yeah, this is self-care, I guess.
Aren't you afraid of the alcohol coming out of those titties and the baby drinking it?
I haven't been participating in any of the nursing, so.
Oh, not even watching nursing.
I have done 85 to 90% of all diaper changes, though, so I'm not sitting this out.
Damn.
Yeah, and I would say I do a good 70% of the burping.
Hey.
You know?
So things having to do with butts and generalized flatulence?
Yeah.
You're all over that.
I really thought that I knew a thing or two about burping and farting, and this baby is teaching me that I am a total amateur in both departments. Just a real gas bag, this kiddo.
I'm gonna be like you, Dad. You know I'm gonna fart like you.
It's nuts. I think that babies swallow air when they cry.
Oh.
So when they're like hungry, they cry to let you know they're hungry, but then they swallow air and then they eat and they swallow air while they're eating. So
what a terrible feeling.
Yeah, it's awful. They're full of bubbles and the bubbles come out both ends. It's just a constant struggle to keep up with both things, you know?
Probably getting a lot of blurfs happening there too, right?
You mean little spit ups?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Not as much as I had anticipated. I thought that was like the number of people that gave us like muslin spit up towels.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh man, we're really in for it. There's going to be a lot of curdled milk oozing all over the house. And it's been, you know, here and there. Nothing major though.
I admire your adherence to your own personal dress code. Like every time I've seen you, you're dressing the same as you ever have. Like you don't always have a baby on your shoulder ready to drop a barf down your back.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't been stung. He's pissed on a shirt.
Yeah.
You've
pissed on your shirts.
Yeah. I was taking him out of the bath and he didn't have a diaper on and he peed on me.
Damn.
But, you know, I don't, like, piss isn't that big a deal, right? That washes off pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, some people think it's something else, but it's piss.
Yeah, it's piss. Just chill. It's piss. I actually had to call up my buddy Andrew Walsh of the Spotless podcast because he did, while nursing somehow sneak a turd around the edge of the diaper and all over a like oatmeal colored rocking chair that we got for nursing.
Damn.
And the poop that a newborn infant generates is sort of bright orange.
Yeah.
10 coats of competition orange, hand rub lacquer with a blue plain manifold. Full fucking race cans. Whoa.
Yep. That stain was not coming out. And Andrew Walsh, co-host of the Spotless podcast, talked me through some extreme measures I could take in trying to remove the stain. And it worked. He recommended a product called Folex that I went down.
Oh, yeah.
I went down to my local home center and got a bottle of Folex. And
we've got Folex.
Got that stain right out.
Wow.
It was great. Yeah. My wife was beside herself. She was so angry because this chair is like, I mean, we bought it used, but it was like a new chair. She was very upset that it made it like 1 or 2 weeks into having a baby and was destroyed. And I brought that chair right back to life. I looked like a hero.
It sure feels like our Star Trek podcasts have completed the pivot from comedy Star Trek podcast to comedy Star Trek child rearing home improvement show.
Yeah. I watched the...
We're a multi-hyphenate podcast, aren't we?
I watched the episode with the baby today. I mean, I didn't show him the screen. He listened, but he's...
Ben, I don't know how you held a baby watching this episode, because not to cut to the end, I thought this was one of the funniest Lower Decks episode I'd ever seen.
It was really funny and a delightful surprise. I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah. Let's get into it, Ben. It's Lower Decks Season 3. Episode 7, A Mathematically Perfect Redemption. It's an episode that starts with a previously on. We don't usually get that kind of open on a Lower Decks. And it's a flashback to the season 1 finale, No Small Parts. It's when we met Peanut Hamper.
Yeah, I really liked how this last time on sort of started as clip show.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of flowed into just following what happened to Peanut Hamper after we last saw Peanut Hamper.
And seeing things in POV. Like, we know what happened during that episode because we were there. Like, the dangerous mission that Shax and Rutherford do. And seeing that from the exterior, like, from that remove, made the mission look even more epic. It was amazing.
It really did. Yeah. It's amazing that Peanut Hamper comes off as an even bigger asshole after the events that we saw in that previous episode.
I knew it. Now they're all going to die.
Peanut Hamper watches everything that goes down from a remove and is a smug jerk about the whole thing, even after the Titan arrives.
Yeah. I really love when the flashback is through, we don't cut to theme, and instead we use the theme, right?
Yeah.
We get a different version of the theme song, complete with a custom version of the music. And what that's doing is giving us a passage of time that I don't think we get if we throw to regular theme and then come back.
Right.
That slow, floaty feeling that we get for 90 seconds, I think you really need that.
Very melancholic. They re-recorded the music.
Yeah.
To meet the mood of being stranded and alone.
I found it really effective.
I liked seeing Rutherford's old implant floating out there. I kind of wonder if the fact that that implant is intact and floating in space will factor into another future episode.
I mean, it may have been picked up by the Drukmani, right? We don't know that.
Oh, wow. Yeah. The Drukmani could be wise to whatever's going on with Rutherford before we are.
Right. So Peanut Hamper is talking to themselves while floating through the space flotsam.
I hate Starfleet. What about the needs of the me?
And there's clearly been a sort of castaway style exocomp built, sort of a Wilson-like exocomp called Sophie.
Sophia?
Yeah.
I wrote down.
Yeah.
And in addition to creating this volleyball, Peanut Hamper has created an escape craft out of all the wreckage of all the ships here.
We might just make it. Did that thought ever cross your brain?
Also grown a giant beard and knocked a piece of tooling off of herself using an ice skate.
Right. And eaten a raw crab.
What else happened in that movie?
I think we listed all the things.
That was one of the scariest plane crashes I think I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, that was pretty rough.
God, that was big.
Tom Hanks. A lot of plane crashes in his career, right?
Yeah.
Didn't he play Sully in a movie?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Sure did. And who knows what kind of plane crash happens in Pinocchio. Disney's Pinocchio.
Sure. He crashes his plane into Elvis in that one movie.
That's right. Yeah. He flies a plane across country and then flies it back.
Right, right. Pretty sure he's in United 97.
Right. Yeah, he never learns how to land.
Right, right. He crashes the plane that he's in charge of in Greyhound. What are some other movies that Tom Hanks has done?
I mean, we're going to have to fast forward through all of the Tom Hanks movie titles, because there are many.
So, yeah. But enough crap was left over from all these pack-led ships getting cut apart by the Titan that Peanut Hamper is able to make this, like, semi-warp-capable escape craft. They're just, like, flecks of dilithium available to her, but she thinks it's going to work out. And she is getting ready to make her escape with Sophia or Sophie or whatever. And the Drukmani scavengers show up and almost spoil the escape.
The way that they operate in space is not unlike a trawling fishing boat, right?
Right.
Like they're just scooping up large parts of space and drawing it into their ship for sorting and examination. And this is the moment when Peanut Hamper and Sophie are drawn toward the ship, you're reminded of what a son of a bitch Peanut Hamper is.
Yeah.
Because Peanut Hamper shoves Sophie like into the hole.
Oh, yeah.
And is able to make their escape.
I got a note for the Drukmani. Maybe don't grind up everything that you're claiming for salvage. Like those grinders seem like a bad choice. Like what if there is a fissile warhead still, you know, floating around out there? What if there's a warp core that you draw into your ship? Seems dangerous.
A Rutherford headband could be valuable. Too valuable to smush.
Yeah, don't smush everything.
Yeah.
No accounting for Drukmani math, though.
It's big fun when Peanut Hamper lights off this warp nacelle and takes off.
Yeah.
But one thing I want to say is how much cooler this craft is than anything Rutherford made. Like, how is it that that version of Rutherford made such a shitty looking ship and Peanut Hamper can make something better? Like,
yeah,
it goes, I think I might even put this one, Refletherford's Delta Flyer, best looking improvised ship, and then Peanut Hamper's single nacelle ship, and then whatever Rutherford made.
Wow.
That's how I'm ranking him.
I think, crucially, the escape craft that Peanut Hamper makes would not win a race in the neutral zone.
Yeah.
Because instead of getting her to safety, it gets her shot into the atmosphere of a planet after the engine goes critical and just propels the chair part forward out of the warp bubble. And we get like a boot up sequence to Rattan.
Rattan? Where the frick am I?
Peanut Hamper comes to in a scene that we see a lot in science fiction. There's a character that has passed out and then they come to in an unfamiliar place. And Peanut Hamper meets an owl looking person.
Yeah.
Like not all birds are owls, but initially I was like, oh, this is an owl planet.
Yeah, it's kind of an owl planet, except for they have like lion feet.
Yeah.
They're not griffins, though.
No.
But they do have claw feet, despite that.
This person introduces themselves as Kaltoris, and at this moment in time, you think he's some sort of scientist or medical professional.
Your metal body is fascinating.
Wow, Scaramouche, I don't know you, sir. You're being very creepy.
I was really wondering, are we in a Misery situation,
or
are we in a C-3PO in the Ewok village situation? And it really winds up being a third thing.
It's so interesting because you're set up to dislike Peanut Hamper so utterly. What would it mean if this was a Misery situation?
Right.
You know, like, do you want Peanut Hamper's ankles broken with a sledgehammer? I don't know. I want to find out how that would feel.
Eventually, you'll come to accept the idea of being here.
Does Peanut Hamper have ankles?
Yeah.
Or are those feet just bolted right onto her little body?
It seems threatening at first because Kaltoris comes at Peanut Hamper with a scalpel, and the moment seems like it could be violent, but instead he's going in there to scrape off some of the crud.
I didn't say mud, I said crud.
Yeah.
That has accumulated on Peanut Hamper over the, I don't know, months that they've been floating in space.
I sort of wondered about that because it doesn't seem like anyone gets particularly far in scraping that stuff off.
Yeah. This is how Peanut Hamper looks.
Because, like, for most of the first half of this episode, Peanut Hamper is looking pretty bedraggled still. But yeah, she's also just like, she's pissed when she finds out that she's in a pre-warp backwater. She's landed on a planet where no rescue is coming because this guy tells her, in my lifetime, nobody has ever come from off-world.
Oh, f***.
Oh, yes. F***, indeed.
I found that, like, from off-world phrasing to be a bit of an interesting foreshadowing. I wonder how much they debate stuff like that in the writer's room because, like, it definitely, like, perked my ears up. Like, oh, this may not be the pre-warp civilization it appears to be at first blush.
Yeah, it's an elegant way to put it in a way that, like, if you're just some fucking hayseed planet, you would just call Peanut Hamper an alien.
Right. Right.
But calling Peanut Hamper an off-worlder suggests a knowledge of things that's a little more sophisticated. Peanut Hamper's attitude is unchanged, really, from the moment we met her. Like, very flip, very sarcastic, very cutting at people who are taking care of her.
Right.
Not appreciative.
Yeah, she's introduced to more of the tribe, including Rauda, who I think is the one that says something about, like, the ancient ones warned us about people like Peanut Hamper.
Yeah.
Rauda is the son of Kaltoris, and boy, what a bod on this guy.
Yeah.
Real aspirational.
Damn.
Abs, pecs, cum gutters, the works.
Getting some major village bad boy vibes from Raw Dog, am I right?
His name is Rauda, and you know nothing of him.
Pretty much the only depiction of an Ariole, like, with a special person.
Yeah.
He's got a hot owl lady to go along with him.
Yeah, and she seems to have a sort of jealous personality.
Yeah.
But she's sort of written out of the show. She never comes back after this scene.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to know how she felt about this whole development.
Peanut Hamper, super disappointed at her circumstances, and just sort of randomly, when a young owl child, like, gives Peanut Hamper a stick, like, as a gift or as a toy or something, she's super incredulous and kind of sarcastically replicates a piece of candy to give in return.
Yeah.
And this is the moment.
Here.
That blows everyone away.
Yeah.
It's just a replicator. Relax.
This kind of moves the chains toward C-3PO and the Ewok village territory.
Right.
Peanut Hamper also complains that she can't do a distress call to Starfleet because a distress call would be an arrest call. She's in trouble.
Yeah.
She abandoned her boy.
Say it louder.
She abandoned her shipmates.
Say it louder. Say it louder.
I abandoned my crewmates. I was more interested in saving myself than in helping them.
So calling for a rescue would also be a thing that would wind up getting her put in a penal colony. And a peanut in a penal colony just ain't going to work.
Nah. So as a construction, this episode has begun with the reminder of who Peanut Hamper is, the circumstances that Peanut Hamper finds themselves in. And now we need to learn about kind of the rules of this planet. And that's what comes up next. Rauda kind of takes Peanut Hamper on a tour of things.
Takes her under his wing, you might say?
I would say that. I'd say that exactly.
Yeah. It turns out everything on this planet has wings, including the sky snakes.
Yeah.
We get the visual language of giant shadow falling across everything is a thing that is greatly feared by these owl people.
Yeah. We witness a goat milking competition between Rauda and Peanut Hamper.
Yeah.
And Peanut Hamper wins because Peanut Hamper is able to replicate a goat milking device.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm shocked they were able to show on screen, even though this is a cartoon.
Yeah. It did seem like the peanut hamper side of the goat milking did get like a little bit more chaste treatment.
Obscured by the leg. Yeah. Yeah, you see the device, but you don't see the milking happen.
Yeah. It is while this milking is taking place that they hear off-screen commotion and the chieftain, Kaltoris. Mm-hmm. I wrote the spelling of Kaltoris so many different ways that every time I look at it on my notes, I'm like, I don't know how to say that. I don't think they say it more than once in the whole episode. So I was like, I think it's about this.
Yeah, I just gave up and started writing down Rauda's father.
Anyways, that guy has been bitten by a sky snake.
Death will be swift.
Anti-venom!
Peanut Hamper is really able to win the tribe over by administering anti-venom and several key vitamins and minerals that his system was deficient in because of his primitive diet.
Hey, good job by Kaltoris eye for an eyeing this thing. Like, he gave it the spear and took the sky snake out.
Yeah, yeah. But so, like, the next day, Peanut Hamper, like, strutting around the village like she owns the place. And everybody loves Peanut Hamper. She's been able to administer Starfleet medical science to pretty much everyone in the whole village and really, like, patch people up. People that previously could not paint can paint. People who previously had bad bowel movements now have great bowel movements.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a particularly notable scene for me. Something that I watched over and over again. Just how satisfied this character was to be cured.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. My fecal matter is back to being oily and white.
Great.
I was a little worried for the tribe. I thought maybe the direction that this episode was going was in this next scene where Rauda introduces Peanut Hamper to the reproductive cycle of these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of the Areolans or whatever they're called. And he's saying like, oh yeah, like we got like 36 eggs in here. It's a real shame. Most of them won't make it to adulthood. And Peanut Hamper is like, not if I have anything to say about it, and waves a light over all of these eggs and they all hatch healthy babies. And I was like, oh, is this going to be a thing about like, the evolutionary destiny of the tribe is thrown off by all of these hatchlings being able to survive in a way that like ordinarily they wouldn't. And then like when they don't have the benefit of technology, they become so burdensome. Like a really dark storyline was starting to unfold itself in my mind. And I was like, Jesus fucking Ben. Christ.
I'm imagining a writer's room that ordinarily is like no bad ideas on the whiteboard. This one doesn't even get written on the whiteboard.
Ben, why don't you go pick up lunch? I know that that's normally a writer's assistant gig, but today...
Why don't you drive the writer's assistant there?
You head to Mendocino Farms and not the one that's close by. Go to the one downtown.
Peanut Hamper could have murdered all of these chicks in their eggs with a little more heat on the heat gun. That doesn't happen, though. All of them hatch and survive.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a sous vide poached egg situation at all.
No. This makes Rauda so happy that he takes Peanut Hamper on a Superman Lois Lane style flight.
Yeah.
And that was really nice.
Yeah.
And they end up in Rauda's favorite place to hide. And this is a place where he grows comfortable enough to kind of share his personal feelings of inadequacy about being the next village leader and how heavy that potential crown is. And Peanut Hamper, for her part, shares her own pain with Rauda about, you know, the burden of her own expectations there. And they have this thing in common, these burdens of expectation.
Speaking of heavy burdens, he drops Trow, and something flops out that really gets Peanut Hamper's attention, and there's sort of an elliptical edit, and it seems that they have gotten down to fucking.
This episode was such a hilarious construction to me because of how much time specifically takes place between their confiding in each other and the sex happening.
Yeah.
Because you need that time to do the math in your head that goes like, they're not actually going to do this, right? And they even talk about it. Like, they don't have parts that correspond. How's this going to work? It's too difficult. And then they do, and then they keep doing it. And it was surprising and hilarious every time. And I feel like this may have been the first orgasm ever depicted in a Star Trek series. Do you think it is?
Wow.
Because when Rauda blasts and the birds take flight,
yeah,
that's unmistakably what it is. And I can't remember ever seeing the suggestion of a blast. There's always ever refractory period depicted in Star Trek. It's never during.
I think the one other example I can think of is in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock, when Savick touches Spock's fingers.
Yeah. That is it, isn't it?
Then they cut to the train entering the tunnel and the rocket ship taking off and the volcano exploding.
That was cool. That, you're right about that. It has been done before.
Would you say that these birds that take flight every time Rauda comes are turtle doves?
I really would.
Yeah. That was sort of what I was thinking too.
Hey, Rauda, where's your girlfriend, man?
Yeah. Did you like formally break things off with her, or is this like a dalliance outside of a committed relationship? What the fuck?
It's pretty hard to ship Peanut Rauda. Not having an answer to that question, huh?
Is Rauda the Adam Levine of Areolus?
Peanut Hamper's body is fucking crazy.
Is Rauda going to name his firstborn after Peanut Hamper, even though he's not technically with her? So in his Rauda-fractory period, he decides that he wants to share an even deeper secret with Peanut Hamper and reveals a secret waterfall full of warp-capable starships, which is a great loophole for Peanut Hamper because it means that the Prime Directive violation was not as bad as she might have previously thought.
And this is another moment where they stick it in each other's loopholes.
Mm.
They fuck again, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. The Rauda-fractory period, a lot shorter than mine.
Yeah. We get a passage of time lapse here that finally arrives at the moment that Rauda and Peanut Hamper get married.
Which is like a couple seasons later. Like, it doesn't seem like that much time has passed. I feel like they may be rushing into this. I'm a fan of the long engagement. What can I say?
When the love is this pure, come on.
I mean, it seems pure, but they barely know each other, as we will come to find out in this episode.
Right.
Peanut Amber has gone OG exocomp for this. I don't know if this is like the way an exocomp dresses formally, but Peanut Hamper has stopped being dirty, scuffed up exocomp with some hints at Starfleet uniform under the dirt, and is now the kind of Core 10 steel rusted exocomp of the TNG episode that introduced these characters.
Right. I mean, she looks great.
She looks beautiful.
The way you want to look on your wedding day.
Mm-hmm. It's her day. And wouldn't you know it, but the Drukmani interrupt her day. It's like Drukmani on your wedding day. It's the scavengers, but there's nothing to scavenge.
It's interesting, like the existential threat that the Drukmani pose versus the reaction that Peanut Hamper has. Like Peanut Hamper is terrified that she is going to get taken by them.
Right.
And everyone else is concerned that their homeland is going to be destroyed.
The reaction that Peanut Hamper has is to send the distress signal that she feared sending all along, which is the distress signal to Starfleet. And wouldn't you know it, it's the Cerritos that picks it up.
Captain, we're receiving a distress call from Peanut Hamper?
It looks like she's transmitting from a planet called Areolus? Areola?
Ankylosaur.
I thought it was kind of an interesting choice that this episode made, that the entire Beta Shift team is on the bridge for this.
Including Dr. McLemo, which as soon as I saw him on the bridge, I was thinking, oh, he is going to have some thoughts about the inhabitants of this planet.
Right.
But we don't get that moment ever.
Yeah, I feel like he would love this place.
I mean, would his parts fit with maybe Rauda's ex-girlfriend?
Damn, yeah.
I mean, she's right there and she's super hot. Like, we were talking about how, like, what a smoke show Rauda is, but like, his ex-lady friend, damn.
Also snackable.
Kind of a Mrs. Bugs Bunny kind of looking cartoon, if you ask me.
Kind of like original Lola Bunny before they ruined her.
Hey, nice playing with you.
Kind of an original green M&M, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I have strong feelings about this. I'm a grown man.
I like to sexualize candy. It's what I like.
I mean,
you can't even hug candy anymore, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. Woke culture is ruining my desire to fuck inanimate objects. Is Baglivo more of a sky snake kind of guy? Is that the way he swings more?
I mean, he's got a lot of options.
Yeah, yeah.
But it seems like any character on this show could stay home and just use the goat milking device that Peanut Hamper replicated, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's like you can't even imagine a society producing enough offspring to maintain its numbers in a context where you can replicate something like that, right?
I know. Yeah, the population crashes post-goat milking device. So the lead Drukmani, to his credit, beams down there for a face-to-face with a couple of his wingmen. And he's like, look, we're here to salvage everything that's underneath these trees.
You're not using it. You're not going to be mad.
Yeah.
But it turns out they are. Kaltoris is like, no, like the trees, somehow the trees are like feeding on the, it's like a cavern full of starships. So
it's like a Rush song down there.
Yeah. Okay. Is the Rush song done playing? Can we get back to the episode?
There's like 4 minutes of the Rush song.
I can't believe we left that in the edit. Jesus.
No. We're going to get sued for using the Rush song.
The head of the Drukmani is like, okay, well, they're not cooperating. We're just going to take it anyways. And this turns into like a catastrophic salvage operation that is not careful about not destroying the village of the Areolans.
Hey, props to the Drukmani for staying with it, though. You know, like they got some resistance. They didn't scram. They stayed in there.
Scavenger's going to scavenge.
Yeah.
And this is bad news. And it seems like, you know, who could come to the rescue? And then it's the Cerritos coming to the rescue. The Cerritos comes out of warp. And I love the like visual from orbit of the Drukmani scavenger ship way down under the cloud cover,
yeah,
extracting resources from the surface of this planet. And that's kind of happening concurrently with Peanut Hamper making what appears to be a self-sacrifice.
Yeah.
Peanut Hamper is saving the day? Here goes everything!
This is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back.
What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast.
Thank you.
Peanut Hamper has hijacked the shuttle from the Drukmani and crashed it into the Drukmani ship and is like scrambling the computer systems on there.
What an interesting callback to the Shax and Rutherford plan from that season one finale, right?
Yeah.
Directly calls that back.
Yeah. And Peanut Hamper appears to save the day. It destroys the Drukmani ship. The explosion up in the sky is devastating to Rauda until we see the Drukmani shuttle coming back out from behind the explosion, and it crashes into one of the like broad decks of the Areolan village, and Peanut Hamper comes out a true hero. Adam,
this episode has like three endings, and this is the first. Because there's a moment of triumph when Freeman, Shax, and Tendi arrive. And they're like, you know what? Peanut Hamper did such a great job. We're not going to put Peanut Hamper in prison. It's fine.
Peanut Hamper's a hero. We're going to write a really creative mission report that kind of peanut butters over anything bad that Peanut Hamper ever did. It seems like Peanut Hamper really learned her lesson.
I think we can give you another chance.
No penal for Peanut. No penal!
I mean, not only is Peanut Hamper vindicated, Peanut Hamper also shows an interest in rejoining Starfleet. Like, this is a totally new Peanut Hamper we're getting here. And Rauda's like, you got any room for me on that ship? Because I'd love to go too.
And this is when Peanut Hamper starts to drop the mask a little bit. She's like, yeah. No, you don't have to come. And he's like, but we just got married. Like, we're... You should take your husband with you.
We constantly have weird robo-bird sex. Rout has become used to the goat milking device, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no going back after that.
No. It's like doing it on ecstasy, you know? But Freeman is totally against it. She's like, there's only room enough for one bird man on my ship.
It's like doing it on ecstasy in one of those massage chairs that also massages your arm. You know, like the... You know, that's like a $10,000 massage chair when you can do the arms also.
Right, right. There's a chair for your arms inside the chair. This kind of coincides with a message from Commander Ransom back up on the ship that the Drukmani are not all as dead as they had previously thought. They have beamed themselves onto an Areola ship?
Ankylosaur.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And that ship, very advanced compared to a California-class starship. Crazy weapons on it.
Yeah. The Cerritos is kind of no match for it.
Yeah. They start attacking the village, and then they start attacking the Cerritos, and it turns out that the Drukmani were in fact summoned by Peanut Hamper.
Yeah.
He's lying.
It came from a prissy little robot, Peanut Butter.
Peanut Hamper saw those ships in that cave and saw a way off world.
The way this is revealed is so deeply shameful, though. Ransom has the good sense to FaceTime the captain of the Drukmani ship, and he's like, what the hell, man? And then they add Freeman into kind of a three-way call.
Yeah.
But then Freeman's side drops out, so like they have to call her back because you can never connect a third line to a three-way call the first time.
Right.
It should just work, but it doesn't. And the Drukmani captain explains, while everyone is listening, that they were responding to this invitation to gather these Areor ships. And they're very confused about why they're not being permitted to do that per the deal.
Right.
And this exposes Peanut Hamper because they play the audio recording of Peanut Hamper soliciting the Drukmani to come out there.
What? That doesn't even sound like me.
So Peanut Hamper, true to form, is an asshole, not a hero.
And is so mean to Rauda, right?
Yeah, she's like, I don't want to live on this shitty-ass planet. I was trying to get off this dump so that I could get back out into space where I belong. I'm a robot.
And Rauda starts to cry. Rauda's a feeling birdman.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay to cry, Rauda.
Peanut!
Oh my god, just shut the up, Rauda. Grow a f***ing beak.
You know, I started to wonder if Peanut Hamper is a bit of a sociopath in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really capable of understanding the feelings of others in a kind of pathological way.
Yeah.
Kind of making decisions that only benefit themselves.
And kind of like...
not involving anyone else in those decisions either.
And kind of like making the same mistake over and over again, even though life has kind of constantly provided correctives against it. And it's like, can't you learn, Peanut Hamper?
No.
Wouldn't it be a refresher to learn from these mistakes?
I mean, you root for Peanut Hamper to one day eventually get it.
Yeah.
But instead, you know, for now.
You don't take joy in Peanut Hamper's failures because these are failures that have knock-on effects for other people.
Yeah. But in this moment, Peanut Hamper doesn't learn. Peanut Hamper classically double middle fingers their way out of the situation that they caused.
Smell you later. Oh, yeah. And I mean that literally because y'all shit everywhere.
The only rescue from this Areolan ship for the Cerritos is going to be a bigger, meaner Areolan ship that rises from the cave. And this is piloted not by Peanut Hamper, but by Rauta. Rauta is here to get Rawenge.
What does it mean?
Here to get Omerta.
And this tiny Areol ship is no match for the bigger one.
Yeah. Yeah. The Drukmani scavengers bested almost immediately. And Peanut Hamper kind of gets kicked out of the tribe. Peanut Hamper no longer welcome on Areolus.
Get out of here!
Oh, whatever. I didn't want to stay here anyway. You're like the poor man's Aurelians.
Rauta has really like completed his ascension into the leader of the village.
Yeah.
And has made the case through action, really, that look, like this technology, this is our birthright. And he'd be damned if the Drukmani put their greasy hands all over it.
Yeah. It's cool that they got walking to play Rauta. Yeah.
They hid the ships, the only place that they knew where, in their asses. The asses of the trees.
I hid this uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass 2 years.
And he's really making the case like, you know, the ancient ones took a step back from being involved in the affairs of the galaxy. But we do not need to live such an orthodox adherence to those beliefs. Mm-hmm. You know, if we want to, we can use our spaceships too. And so like, you know, the Starfleets are like, okay, Peanut Hamper. And Peanut Hamper starts trying to make a third distress call, this one to the Borgs.
Oh, yeah. The Borg would love me.
But they keep mushing the little broadcast antenna down into her birdie so that she can't do it.
Yeah. And in the final scene, we see what happens to Peanut Hamper.
Yeah.
Peanut Hamper is taken by Freeman and the Cerritos back to the Daystrom Institute, where Agamas is their neighbor in the adjoining compartment.
You think this is bad? A room full of awesome robots? I love it here.
Yeah, it really does seem like there's like a third installment to this story that's being set up that co-stars Agamas.
Yeah.
Very fun kind of final button on this episode. But did you like this episode, Adam?
Ben, I love this episode. It might be my favorite episode of Lower Decks that I've seen.
Whoa.
And the reason I'm saying that is because it really leans into and relishes in its weirdness. It is so weird. And at multiple points in the episode, I found myself thinking they're not going to go here. And then they do. And it is such a delight when that happens. And one thing that I figured out after this episode, Ann Kim wrote this episode.
Yeah.
Single credit.
Yeah.
Ann Kim, writer of this episode, who also wrote I, Extricatus, another one of my favorite episodes. Ann Kim is my favorite writer of this show. I've just decided it.
Wow.
I'm now on the lookout for Ann Kim episodes. This was so fucking weird and great. I loved it. And like the voice actor who plays Peanut Hamper, Heather Donahue, like this episode rests on that character's ability to carry it. And the character is so interestingly destructive. And her voice work is so believably manipulative at all times.
Yeah, totally.
Like, how about tossing the keys to this episode to a guest voice actor and just having them carry it? I thought it was kind of a miracle that way, how perfectly it fit together. And I just loved it. Like, highest possible marks for me for this episode. Huge, huge fan. What about you?
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was laughing my butt off at this episode, and I couldn't even hear half the dialogue the first time I watched it because my baby was making weird noises, and I didn't want to turn the TV up too loud for fear of making him make worse weird noises.
We've said this before, Ben, like the toughest laugh to get is the, at least in my mind, when you're alone watching a thing. If I'm laughing and I'm alone and I'm watching a thing, I think that is really tough. The second toughest is when I'm podcasting with you. Mm-hmm. That's the second toughest laugh that anyone can get. But it's much easier to get a laugh in a crowded room full of people laughing at the same thing. That's why shows use canned laughter.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and the ability of this episode to get out loud laughs in spite of me being in a room with only one other human who doesn't speak English yet.
In spite of you physically needing not to laugh and trying to resist the laugh.
Right.
That may be the toughest one of all.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think it's a great episode. I'm not ready to say it's my favorite episode of all time, but I thought it was great. And I agree that Heather Donahue is just such a funny voice performer. And it's so great to see them throw the keys of an episode to somebody after them demonstrating their strengths in a previous episode. Like, I love bringing a character back. I mean, it kind of reminds me of like Faith Saley coming back for a second episode on Deep Space Nine because she, you know, was so great the first time and getting like an even bigger, weirder thing to do. So yeah, really nice all around.
I Excretus was that episode where Boimler repeatedly does the Borg's holodeck simulation.
Like, right.
That's an example of this show leaning into its own ability to be absurd. That sort of suggests an episode like this being possible.
Right.
Back then. And I can't imagine now that they're starting to build up a catalog of episodes where they can get that weird, how much weirder things are liable to get.
Get as weird as you possibly can, Lower Decks.
Yeah.
I implore you.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, do you want to see if there's anything weird in the Priority One inbox on this episode of Greatest Trek?
No, there usually is.
It's true.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from a weird dad friend of DeSoto, and it is to Ben.
Hey, that's me.
This is just for you, Ben.
Okay. You plug your ears while you read it, okay?
Message goes like this. Your baby was born like a week ago, and I'm still chuckling at the dumb colostrum I barely knew him joke you made on Twitter. Congratulations to you and your family.
I forgot I made that joke. That was one of those, like,
just a stone cold classic by you, Ben.
Yeah, there's definitely a couple of days in there where I was so, my mind was such oatmeal that I was like pulling open Twitter and tweeting stuff, and I'm like, I should not be tweeting right now. I'm not of sound mind and body. I'm lucky that that's the kind of shit I was tweeting.
I can't believe how with it you are right now. You're doing great. You're really good at this show.
We're having a great time.
I have no excuse for being as bad as I am at this show.
You're great. You're great, Adam. Our second Priority One message on today's episode is from Chris in DC, and it's to Adam and Ben, alphabetically.
Oh, I thought this one was just going to be for me.
No, it's to me also.
I have to share.
Yeah, I got both of them this week. You only got one.
Cool.
Goes like this. First, if the phrase is Friends of DeSoto, shouldn't the initialism be F-O-D instead of F-O-Ds? Just curious.
God damn it!
Fuck! We've been fucking up the grammar on social media? A place where you're not allowed to fuck up grammar?
You know that's gonna be out there forever.
Oh, God! The Library of Congress is gonna have a grammar mistake that we made! Because all tweets go on there! Fuck!
There are space probes full of our show references hurtling through the galaxy as we speak, and they're all wrong!
Second, since Shatner is acting at peak Shatner levels in the movie Airplane 2, the sequel, can you guys review the movie in a rare break in the Trek Industrial Complex broadcast schedule?
Oof. Man, Airplane 2 just kind of makes me sad.
Oh, really? I don't think I've seen Airplane 2. I've definitely seen Airplane 1. And
the first Airplane is so great.
Yeah.
Airplane 2 is like the Star Trek 5 of airplane movies.
What? Star Trek 5 is great.
I know.
Do they kill God in Airplane 2? Is that why?
Yeah.
Is there a rocket boot rescue sequence?
There is also that.
Cool. Yeah. It sounds like a good movie.
And not as much nudity as the first.
Maybe, I have a pitch for you, Adam.
All right.
Maybe this is a thing we could do with our buddies over at the Flophouse podcast as a listener bonus sometime.
That sounds nice. Any excuse to do something with them is good in my mind.
And, if it's a bad movie, who better to review it with than Stu, Dan, and Elliot over at the Flophouse?
All right. We'll chat them up about it. Look.
It's just it's a collaboration episode where Adam is just sad the entire time.
You're describing a lot of episodes that we do together. You know what? Including this one, because if you've got a priority one message just for Ben and Ben alone,
yeah,
and then I guess also for me and Ben, or you got an idea for a bonus episode or any idea at all. Look, we read P1 messages of all kinds, and you can send yours to us by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron.
You sure can. We'd really appreciate it.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you discover yourself and Edward Larkin?
I did. I'm going to give it to a character who I think is named Doyle, which is one of the many things that I think is funny about this character. Doyle, of course, is the owl man whose fecal matter has been greatly improved by some medical intervention that Peanut Hamper brought to bear. And the reason Doyle is by Edward Larkin is that Doyle appears to have a barrel of bird poop that it's like wiping off on his shirt. That just really made me laugh. That was like A+ funny stuff in this episode.
I thought Doyle was a painter or something, or some kind of artist.
Yeah, there was a different painter guy, but then there was Doyle.
It's important to distinguish Doyle as his own thing.
Yeah, Doyle's got a barrel of poo. How about you, Adam? Did you find yourself in Edward Larkin?
You know what? There's no other place to say this. I'm just going to say this here. Great job by this episode not going after the low-hanging cloaca joke.
Wow. Yeah.
Never mentioned.
No kidding.
Maybe it was looked at when Rauta drops his pants, but maybe that's not what Peanut Hamper's talking about. Maybe there's a great big crank down there because all of these birds have lion feet or whatever, like you say. Maybe these are lion penises.
Right. I mean, is a crank complicated, though? Yeah. That's the question.
I mean, it seems that way, but there is no crank too complicated for an exocomp with a micro replicator.
True.
On the front, right?
That's fair.
Ben, my Edward Larkin is going to be Peanut Hamper herself. I just cannot get over the similarities between Peanut Hamper and Edward Larkin. Someone seeing the world in a kind of tunnel vision that, as you say, is totally sociopathic. I wonder if at some point we're going to get the vault open at the Daystrom Institute, like the scene in Ghostbusters where they open up the containment unit and all the ghosts fly out.
Right,
like,
right.
I wonder if there's going to be that day where some idiot city employee is going to order the Daystrom Institute to release the robots and then all hell is going to break loose.
Yeah. The EPA will for some reason take great umbrage with the way the Daystrom Institute operates.
That would be a great big mistake.
Yeah. 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 Well, Adam, it was big fun reviewing this episode with you. Hey, is there anything going on social media about? Didn't we come up with a name for this segment and then forget what the name was?
Damn it. You're right. We did. And now I don't remember.
Well, that's just us in a nutshell. I mean,
God,
we came up with
so
a name
stupid.
And then took a month off. So,
all right, Ben. Twitter handle @MasterKelso. Message goes like this. Now is the time. If you have never listened to Greatest Trek before, there is a new season of Lower Decks that they are going to put their signature stank on. It's a couple of guys with great takes on Star Trek. Join us.
Hell yeah. Thank you, @MasterKelso.
Master Kelso is talking about this here show And even though this is episode 7 of this third season, it's never too late to get into Greatest Trek and experience the greatness of Lower Decks with us.
And if you'd like to hear your social media handle fly out of one of our mouths, tweet or post on Instagram about the show. Tell people why you like it and why they should be listening. And you'll show up in this segment that definitely has a name.
One of the great names.
Yeah. We were so creative and smart when we thought of it and then remembered it. All right.
How is something that enormous made out of latex? That biz.
Should we throw it to Wendy? I think that's what we got to do at this point, Adam.
Yeah, I think we're done. I think we're done. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
Greatest Trek is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica, and it's produced and edited by Wendy Pretty. Coming up on Lower Decks Season 3, it's Episode 8, Crisis Point 2, Paradoxus. Boimler's holodeck movie sequel tries to live up to the original. As you probably know by now, this podcast is audience-supported. So if you are in the position to pitch in, you can do that at MaximumFun.org/join. Your membership gets you access to monthly bonus episodes from Ben and Adam, and we really appreciate everyone who supports. Thanks to Adam Ragusea for the show's original music. His podcast and the YouTube cooking channel are definitely worth checking out. Just search for Adam Ragusea. Thanks also to Nick Ditmore for the show art and Bill Tilly for managing the social media pages for Uxbridge Shimoda. Make sure you're following at Greatest Trek on Instagram and Twitter, and be sure to tag us in your posts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week on Greatest Trek.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.